From Texas Public Radio, this is Texas Matters, a weekly radio news magazine that looks at the issues, events, and people in the Lone Star State. Today on Texas Matters, a conversation with author Valeria Luiselli about the humanitarian crisis on the southern border and the role of the writer. This is Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Valeria Luiselli's 2017 book, Tell Me How It Ends, An Essay in 40 Questions, is an accounting of the author's time working as an immigration courtroom interpreter in New York City. Like many of us, she was preoccupied with the border surge that occurred in 2014 and perplexed at the plight of the unaccompanied children, some 80,000 who made the perilous journey from the violence and despair of their home countries in Central America. Luiselli follows up with her latest book, a novel, Lost Children Archive. This is a story of a blended family making their life in America with the immigration crisis as a looming and vexing part of their life. The protagonist in this work of fiction confronts the realities of an unimaginable problem that colors her work, her home life, her marriage, even her own children. Author Valeria Luiselli spoke to Texas Public Radio contributor Yvette Benavides about her most recent books, Borders, and her writing life.
So I wanted to ask you about Lost Children Archive. How is it that we've come to a place where this title inspires, of course, dread, but also somehow a feeling of something familiar and even ordinary? Are we getting complacent about the shock and the horrors of these events happening along the border?
Well, first of all, I should say that this was the title that I initially chose for the novel. And then I started writing this novel in 2014. Then it became partly the title for Tell Me How It Ends in its version in Spanish, which was published in 2016, I believe, in the Spanish-speaking world, Los Niños Perdidos, The Lost Children. And then it remained the title of the novel in English. So it's been something that has been in my mind and going on in the borderlands of this country for a long while now, right? But although it was a situation that made it to headlines and was paid attention to in the summer of 2014 when there was a surge of arrivals of undocumented children traveling alone, it then kind of left the space of deeper discussion altogether, and only now has come back because the situation is much more violent towards children and families with the Trump administration. So, I mean, it's a reality that is not new. I don't think it depends who the we is, but the people have become necessarily less sensitive to this particular situation. I think the people that were attentive to the development of this have been looking at it and worried, and also, I should say, involved. I mean, I know more and more people that are involved in different capacities with this crisis, either as volunteers through organizations, in translation in courts, or in the context of hospitals, people that are writing about it, people that are teaching, people that are advocating. So I don't think that it's that on the side of civil society, this is a situation that is sort of more and more outside the scope of our worries. But it is obviously one that this administration has transformed into a deeper humanitarian crisis.
So the other book that you mentioned, Tell Me How It Ends, An Essay in 40 Questions, and then the novel Lost Children Archive, these two books are like these conjoined fraternal twins, like these conjoined twins, but maybe kind of fraternal. One's a fictionalized account of the earlier work. So I wanted to ask you, was that deliberate? In other words, as you're writing the nonfiction, did you know you'd be writing the novel? Did you already have the novel in mind?
Yeah, the relationship between those two books, Tell Me How It Ends and Lost Children Archive, is actually not chronological and linear. It's it's much more complex. I began writing the novel in 2014. Mm-hmm. And as I became more involved, and the novel, I should say, is not a fictionalization of the crisis at the border. The novel is not a novel even about immigration. I think it's a novel like with immigration, but it's not a novel about the crisis. We can talk about what it is about later if you want. But in any case, I started writing it in 2014, and as I became more and more deeply involved with the crisis through translating as a volunteer translator in the immigration court in New York, and then later in Hempstead with the community of recently arrived teenagers and so on, I also became more and more enraged politically. And I started using the novel as a space in which I was dumping my political rage and frustration, and also as a space to explain the deeper roots of this crisis. So, I was going way back to American interventionism in Central America in the 70s before the civil wars there. So I, at some point, luckily realized that I was really messing the novel up by trying to stuff it with all of this. And I was also not doing justice to the issue itself by trying to fictionalize it. So I stopped writing the novel, and I wrote Tell Me How It Ends, which is a very straightforward, linear account of both the American immigration system and the situation from which children were fleeing and are still fleeing Central America. And once I wrote Tell Me How It Ends, I was able to return to the novel with a very different spirit, and then use the novel as a space, not directly for my politics and for my own witnessing of the crisis, but more as a space for reflecting on how to think about political violence and political crises, but not like a direct reportage of the crisis itself, just like one step remove and contemplation of how to bear witness.
And you mentioned your role as an interpreter. Are you more or less convinced about the reasons people want to come to America? I mean, to traverse those hundreds of miles and set foot on what is basically really inhospitable land here in the United States. What did you find in your experience as an interpreter regarding the reasons that people would even put themselves through that or put their children through that?
Well, people have no choice when they decide. I mean, it's choosing death not to leave when they have been threatened to death by gangs, where they have seen family members and friends die at the hands of gang members who continue to go by with absolute impunity because there's a systemic problem where the police is involved and government actors are involved. So we're not talking about like violence in the neighborhood because there's like a violent gang that's kind of threatening some people. We're talking about an entire system that is threatening people's lives and killing them. And in the case particularly of children, recruiting them forcibly. And in the case of women, it's a lot related to sexual violence as well. So there is, I mean, it's a journey that people make not because they want to come here and have a better life and or follow the American dream or what used to be thought of as this migration to the U.S. I mean, we're talking about a diaspora of people who are fleeing because they have no choice.
The thing about the U.S.-Mexico border is that it's such a complex space. Most people simply don't know and don't understand the space or anything about the people coming from Central America. I think Lost Children Archive is a document on its own. Even though you say it's not really about this, but on its own it provides insight about a number of things, maybe in tandem with Tell Me How It Ends. And I keep thinking that when we write about the border, the topic remains evergreen, meaning that at least since around 2007 or maybe even since 2001, the story of paranoia and fear being directed at the other that kind of bloomed after 9/11 continues on all these years later. I don't imagine that in 5 years, in 10 years or so, someone's going to pick up your books and not have a sense of the story of the children criminalized and caged at a time in their lives when what they really needed was compassion. What do you want these books to stand for right now, but then also in another decade?
It's a complex and wonderful question, the one you're asking me. And I think about all the literature around the border and around borders in general, right? Because I'm a reader of this issue on a wider global scale. I go to Sicily a lot and have worked with organizations in Palermo who are working with migration from Northern Africa to Italy, for example. So, and I've read a lot of sort of the European version of how to rethink national borders and how to face immigration from a framework of human rights and not national security. And it's interesting that you mentioned 9/11, because I think that very clearly that's where something really changed. I mean, Homeland Security was created after that. Immigration started to be treated as an issue of national security and no longer by the Department of Treasury as it used to be, right? And ICE was created, Immigration and Customs Enforcement. So there was definitely a very big shift. But the complexity of the borderlands, Mexico and the U.S., of course, goes way, way back, right? And the literature around it is one that I think should be read and studied to understand how the discussion evolves and how our view of the border changes. I mean, I'm thinking now of Gloria Anzaldúa and her absolutely always timely version of the border that just doesn't get old, right? Because there's always things that return. And I don't know. I mean, this particular novel discusses, of course, the border, sort of approaches it without claiming any sense of understanding it in its entirety. But it does make a case of, regarding the way that we can even begin to grasp something as complex as a borderland, right? So again, I would say, like, yes, I mean, this is a novel with immigration. This is a novel with a look to borderlands. But I write fiction very much the way I write essays, which is sort of always circling around and observing and not really providing closed and definite conclusions.
And I think you're hitting on something related to my next question. It's something that I grapple with too, even though I'm from the border. I'm from Laredo, in Texas, and I have a border story, and a story about life there that's different from somebody from Nuevo Laredo, for instance.
Right, right.
So James Wood from The New Yorker. And other reviewers, too, have pointed to this idea in the context of your work that, and other writers, too, that writers are somehow privileged in terms of writing somebody else's story. But they've said that you've been so forthcoming and honest about the difficulties of writing these stories that are not your own. And it was James Wood who noted that, in fact, you have a story of displacement, too, and that even as it's similar to the stories of the asylum seekers, it's different in important ways. And then he refers to your book as a kind of what he calls a literary intervention. I thought that was so interesting. Can you see your book in that way as some kind of a literary intervention?
Yeah, I mean, I think of the place of fiction and the place of writing in general often, right? I mean, I think about it also because I walk into a train or an airplane or a subway, and I notice that less people are reading books and more people are with their phones. And I wondered, but what are we even doing, those of us who write, like, and what's our function right now, right? And I mean, I like to think that this book, Lost Children Archive, as my other fiction, is a kind of intervention in a much wider discussion that will, I mean, it's a voice that should create, or that I would like to see create, more questions and answers, more discussion rather than less. It should be refutable, it should be rethinkable, it should be updatable, right? I mean, but if we don't have that, if we don't even leave a record of our time, or a testimony of how we envision our time, then there's nothing forward, right? Then we leave just emptiness, blankness, and then what do we do years from now if we haven't made the constant effort to think and rethink something? So I see the importance of fiction there too, right? It's a thread, it's a fabrication that is also a testimony of our times and our worldview in a particular moment of history. And so I think it is important. It is what we're going to have later on as well.
And maybe sort of concomitant to that is elsewhere I read that you're a writer's writer. And I find that while you write in the classic mode that I appreciate, your work, I think, has also been viewed as kind of experimental, or maybe that's the wrong word, sort of unconventional. Do you think that's a consequence of, like, a sensibility you've sort of developed via all the travels that you've had and being this kind of displaced person and all the experiences that you've had, besides in the United States? Or could it be, to go back to Wood's statement about literary intervention, that it's a case of you're not wanting to impose some kind of, you know, artifice or contrivance on a story such as this one, even with all its verisimilitude based on true stories of misery and the injustices? But there's something there, yeah, around your style or your voice or your approach.
Yeah, I mean, I would say two things. First of all, I'd say that, like, I'm more interested in a kind of fiction that is visibly asking itself what its place is in the world, kind of what we were just saying a moment ago. Not a fiction that is a simple mimicry of reality. There is a lot of good fiction that does that, but I'm not so interested in that kind of fiction. I like fiction that kind of has, like, pores and holes, and that is, like, self-reflective about what it's actually doing. You know, when I want to watch just a complete, utter fiction, I often turn to another genre, from series to movies to, like, I just find that in my engagement with books, I prefer books that, like, I don't know, that stab me in the back sometimes, not in the back, or in the side, I would say. The back is a horrible thing. But that, or that, you know, that work, I mean, that's a better metaphor, that maybe are like a thorn on our sides, that sort of make us uncomfortable or make us rethink, right? Mm-hmm. About what it is that fiction itself is doing. So in that sense, I write a fiction that, I mean, it could be called experimental or not. I don't really like those labels because I feel that they end a discussion rather than begin it. Mm-hmm. Like, if we say something is experimental or is out of fiction, then there's often not the question of how so and to what end and in what way. And so more than experimental, I would just say what I've just said, you know, that I like fiction that is, like, self-reflective of its role in the greater discussion and its role in its intervention in the world, as we could also put it. And then, on the other hand, I don't know that I'm, or am I, or on the contrary, I know that's not a new thing at all. I mean, there is a strand of American, meaning U.S. fiction that does a similar thing. I mean, Ben Lerner writes in that kind of streak, and Sheila Haiti, and Leanne Shapton. There's many people, actually. But it's also, I would say, more like the regular Latin American fiction, mm-hmm. right? That maybe here seems experimental, but is not at all in the Latin American-speaking world, or in the French-speaking world either, right? So it's just, I mean, ways of writing and ways of thinking about what we're doing. And I guess in many ways here it could read as something not traditional, but I guess it also depends on what traditions you're writing in and how you're moving and threading your own thoughts through those traditions.
Well, and so kind of related to that in terms of like sociolinguistic concerns, it's said that our identities are shaped by our language, and that has implications for our writing too. So I'm wondering, so all of your books have been well received. Previously, your works were translated from Spanish to English. Now there are these two books out in the world that you've written in English. And I don't mean to say that your identity somehow morphed, but did you note anything regarding differences in your writing or your process writing these particular creative works in English?
I like that you mentioned process, because that's really where it happens, right? And where the linguistic, the wonderful linguistic mess that bilingual people live in, that's where it happens, really. It's like the kitchen. And I write in both languages, kind of indistinctly, or also sometimes just in the same sentence, like a sentence begins in a language and termina en otro idioma, no? And all my notes are in that way. So I write my books in both languages. My previous books in Spanish were also in note form, taken bilingually. And in fact, my first novel, Faces in the Crowd, originally I started writing it in English. And then 50 pages in or so, I realized that wasn't working, and I tried it in Spanish, and that worked. And with this novel, Lost Children Archive, it was opposite, actually. I started in Spanish, and it just wasn't working. And at some point, I started in English, and that did work. So I just think that there's a series of factors that might determine what language you finally choose to write in, but the process is bilingual. The process is completely bilingual in all my books. So in this sense, it wasn't different. Mm-hmm. Perhaps just like once I started writing into the computer and no longer only notes, there was a sense, there was a bit of a thrill with new possibilities, right? Mm-hmm. Like I was like playing in a completely new playground, although not completely new, but I don't know. It gave me like the joy of like of unknowing, not of not knowing, and the kind of thrill of not knowing, and I don't know. It's complex. It has so many layers.
It's really fascinating to think about it. But speaking of Lost Children Archive, what's so interesting to me in the story about this narrator and her marriage, I mean, they're on a road trip, but it feels like a forced union at this point where the relationship has lost its luster. And they're driving along with the children in tow, and not to read too much into it, but I keep considering the ways that the union sort of mirrors what our country has with so many other countries right now, problems getting along, dealing with each other, never quite in a state of mutual understanding. And then in the novel, we see the effects on the children and the children of the narrator. And what happens next, which I won't spoil, but suffice it to say, these boxes of archives, the interviews, the voices of the children, the stories retold, this novel, your previous book, and what they do in the face of an incredible tragedy that is at our front door and has been for a long time, all the lost children. But it's, as you said earlier, it's, and as you say, it's not the end of the story, as you point out in more ways than one. The story doesn't end. The story's not. Mm. The story just doesn't end. But what can possibly be the next chapter?
Oh, I have no idea. I mean, I know vaguely in what direction I want to work in now, but I don't know. I can't, unfortunately, but maybe also fortunately, not predict the future. I know that I'm more and more interested in thinking about both immigration in the context of mass incarceration, both as an activist and as a writer, like thinking of ways in which writing can happen in the spaces of confinement where undocumented migrants are being subjected to institutional violence, and thinking whether that, whether writing in those spaces can be an element that gives people more agency. I'm teaching a creative writing course in a detention center here in the, just outside New York with young ladies, I guess girls / young ladies, like between 14 and 17, and have been thinking about, for example, collectivity, like how maybe collective writing can be a tool that both like protects people's identities when they need to be protected because they have to remain anonymous because of their legal situations. But also a tool to create community. And that's what writing is. And that's what this book is about as well, right? Like how storytelling basically is like the thread in the larger social fabric that brings us together. I mean, storytelling does have that power to knit a story that, weave together a story that does the opposite of estrange us, but rather sort of bring us together in a similar in the same page, in the same tapestry. So I've been thinking in that direction, how to write about that, how to bring writing out from those spaces, how to engage in documenting incarceration, but doing it in an ethical way and also in a way that's safe for the people in that circumstance, right? Because there's a big paradox in all of this, which is, you know, there one has to protect identities that are vulnerable to political violence, but then not telling the stories and also silencing their voices is being somehow complicit in the institutional violence that shuts people up, right? So there has to be a way in between those two places that is productive, both politically and aesthetically.
Valeria Luiselli is the author of Lost Children Archive, among other works of fiction and nonfiction. Her work has been translated into more than 20 languages. She spoke to Texas Public Radio contributor Yvette Benavides. That's it for this edition of Texas Matters. Thanks for listening. I'm David Martin Davies. You can write to us with an email to texasmatters@tpr.org. You can also write directly on our show page on our website at tpr.org. And that's where you can listen to past Texas Matters programs, and you can find us wherever you download your podcast. And tune in again next week for another edition of Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio.